Welcome to Double X Science. It's in your genes. Today is Friday, May 3rd, 2013. I am Adrian Rurick, chemistry editor, and with me today is Chris Gunter, science ed editor at Double X Science.
Hello. Hey, everyone.
Hi, Chris. Chris, I was just curious, what drew you to Double X Science as a writer?
Well, this is a good and embarrassing story. So I had just heard about the Science Online meeting in 2012, which is an awesome meeting. And if you're listening to this podcast, you should totally be going. And I went, and really one of my goals for that meeting was to get a chance to do a little more blogging because I wanted to explore that method of communication. And so I ended up sitting on a bus right next to Emily Willingham, our fearless leader at Double X Science. And I just fangirled all over her and told her how awesome I thought the blog was and how I would love to get a chance to blog. And she was nice enough to say, okay, you can join us at Double X Science. Yay!
Oh, cool.
So that's how I got here.
So you are a fan of the blog and just bumping into Emily.
Exactly.
Is what did it. Well, that's fantastic. I already told my story back with in a podcast with Jeff Perkel in February, so if people really want to know about mine, they can go listen
in
to
archives.
Yeah, they can go back and look for February podcast with Jeff. So
excellent.
Now let's move on to our week of posts.
Okay, so the first post that we had this week was by Emily Willingham about that 1 in 50 autism number. Emily is so great the way that she consistently takes on and advocates for applying science to autism. If you are interested in the subject and you haven't read some of her blogs, you're really cheating yourself because she's just done such a great job with these. So she is taking on in this post new figures from the CDC about autism prevalence. And I know when I go and give talks a lot to people that are interested in genetics and genomics, I get asked about autism all the time because it seems like everybody has a child or a grandchild or a friend or knows someone. And the big question for the last couple of years has been, it's clear that prevalence, quote unquote, in autism is rising in the U.S. It's risen almost dramatically. And the question is that due to more people actually having autism, or is that due to the community being better at labeling them with autism? And so that's the topic that she tackles in this blog post and on the CDC's report. And they, as she says here, conclude the report with much of the recent increase, especially children aged 6 to 13, was a result of diagnoses of children with previously unrecognized autism spectrum disorder. So it sounds like that's really the side they're coming down on, is that it's not so much that we are actually having dramatically more children with autism, it's that they're being diagnosed at a higher frequency than they used to be.
Okay. When I posted it, I had people who still thought maybe it was a what's causing this post, but it's not really that, is it?
No. It's reporting on the CDC's deep analysis. I mean, obviously they have access to most of the data that one would need to actually really conclusively answer this question. And so she's just reporting on their analysis, which is really important.
Okay. In a related way of sort of misunderstandings of the literature and data, we had a post later on in the week about selling the flu shot, in that it's hard to get the public to take their annual flu shot.
Yep.
And that's partially because there's these immeasurable and variable effects wherein they're guessing which flu strains are going to be the big ones that year, and so which ones they will need to be trying to vaccinate for. And people have the varying levels of, I'd say, immunization or something that occurs. And you have so many people who feel like, oh, I got the shot and I'd still get sick. Or I never got the shot and I never got sick. And in fact, when I posted this article on my Google+, it's a still conversation going on 2 days later. I have 14 comments and just all these people who are talking about whether or not they got sick. And some of these people are clearly against getting the flu shot. And some of them are, you really need to get the flu shot. And one of the points is, of course, that you can be a carrier and not actually be sick.
Right.
And then you're passing it to people who have a lower immunity rate. And just vaccinating those people doesn't protect them, because you actually need to achieve this herd immunity.
Yep, exactly.
So it's actually quite a long post, and she goes quite a bit into the statistics and whatnot. This is Double X Science contributor Leah Schaefer who wrote this post. And it's well worth the read so that you can understand first what the science of the flu shot is, what the statistics of the flu shot is, and why it's hard to get people to get their flu shot.
Yep, absolutely. And I agree with you. You totally hear people all the time saying the flu shot gave me the flu because I got it right afterwards. And that can't happen. That's not how the flu shot works. It must be, as you said, that you were already had the virus in you before you got the flu shot. And then it just happened to come out because it takes about 2 weeks, she says, for the immunity to work. So if you get infected during that time, you're still going to get the flu. So it's an unfortunate coincidence.
Right. And most people get the flu shot right in the height of flu season.
Exactly. Yeah. Because we're busy, right? I mean, that's how it goes.
Yep.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And then also along the lines of health this week, we had an infographic on the urinary tract infection by contributor Susan E. Matthews. And she's posted with us before, and it's a fun little infographic, so I encourage people to take a look at that.
Yep, absolutely.
You can find those posts at our website, xxscience.org, by clicking on the links to the post title on the main page. In addition to our XX Science site postings, our sister site, XX Science Junior, had 3 posts this week. The first post of the week was about the animals hiding in T-Rex's roar. And yes, we do normally have peer-to-peer articles where our writers, our bloggers, are ages 8 to 18, but this particular post by Kyle Hill, he is an adult. However, I was interested in this post because my 13-year-old daughter recently saw the 3D edition of Jurassic Park, and I did see the film 20 years ago when it came out.
Back in the day.
Not to give away my age or anything. I just thought it was a fun post about how they did decide to give the Tyrannosaurus its roar, and obviously you don't want to use just one animal because then it would just sound like whatever animal we're familiar with.
I thought that was really cool in the post. I mean, this was a great finding, the way they combine it. Says a baby elephant squeal, an alligator gurgling, and a tiger snarl. And I also had no idea that Chewbacca, his call, I guess, was mixing together walrus and camel and tiger noises. That's what it says. That's amazing, right? I had no idea. So, I thought this was really fun.
That is funny. But, yeah, he talks about other movies and their sound effects and how you can go ahead and make some sound effects at home.
Cool.
So this is very cool. And even though it's written by an adult, it was kind of written to an adult audience in terms of reading level, you know, I think everyone could get something out of this, including our 8-year-old readers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another post we had was called Math Week 1, and this is a little post about doing coding or codes. And it was actually an example of a math session. So if we have teenagers who are in the Vancouver area and they're interested in taking part of that Future Science Leaders program at Science World in Vancouver, this would be an example session they'd sit through too. So.
Yeah, that's cool. It gave them a coded message and told them how to identify patterns in the code and think about how that related back to the alphabet so they could solve the code that was used to make the message. Yeah, I thought that was fun.
Yeah. And lastly, at the end of the week, we had a post on the Namaqua rain frog. And this is a hilarious looking frog. So yeah, head on over and take a look at this frog.
I'm looking at the frog. That is kind of scary.
It's hilarious.
I love it. Like a marshmallow.
Aww. Yeah, it looks like it blows up and then it shrinks back down.
Yeah.
I don't know if those photos are only of it in the blown up.
Right, that's what it looked like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a pufferfish.
And you can find these posts at xxsciencejr.blogspot.com or by following the link from the xxscience.org main page. So now on to our news. Chris, what science news have you been reading this week?
So I've been reading one of my favorite papers that came out this week is from a consortium called the Cancer Genome Atlas, abbreviated as TCGA. They have a paper out in Nature this week, and it's open, so anyone can go and download and read through it. And in full disclosure, I'm a consultant to this project, so they asked me to help them edit the paper, and I'm acknowledged at the end. But I still think it's pretty cool, and that is that these multiple groups work together to produce a molecular picture of endometrial cancer. So endometrial cancer is the fourth most common malignancy in women in the U.S. So there are a lot of reasons, obviously, for us to keep working on this and other cancers. And so what they did here is look at multiple genomic and transcriptomic, that's all the expressed transcripts from the genome, and proteomic, looking at proteins, from the genome in normal endometrial cells versus different types of endometrial and uterine cancers. And then they combine lots and lots of data. Whenever I think about these projects that the Cancer Genome Atlas does, the best way I like to describe them is like the blind men and the elephant, whereas you have a number of different labs and they're each working on a different part of the elephant. And then at the end, we get a complete picture of a cancer by putting all of the data together and being able to stand back in this analogy and say, oh, it's an elephant and not a tree trunk or a rope or anything like that, right? So that's what they've done here, as they've done on multiple cancers. And for endometrial, the important thing is other groups have suggested, and this big study confirmed, that there are different molecular subtypes of the tumor in endometrial, and that's particularly important because some of them respond really well to radiation therapy and others don't, but they respond very well to chemotherapy. So now papers like this are the data that we need for people to develop diagnostic tests at the time that can help people decide the right course of therapy based on their molecular subtype of tumors. I just think that's the future. I mean, that's so important.
That is important. I was discussing actually the same thing with somebody else, and they mentioned that currently doctors are just kind of guessing which one that they need to send their patients to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so that's why, you know, the NIH has funded this Cancer Genome Atlas project in such a big way. So that is fine, and it sounds like you are reading something interesting as well.
Yeah, I like to read news from the Association for Women in Science, AWIS.org, and they have a monthly thing called the Maddening Monthly Mention, and so it's about women in science and what's very frustrating about what's going on in the culture. And this month's is called Silly Solutions to Serious Problems. And this is really an extensive post because it links to a number of different issues going on. So there's the obstacles faced by women in STEM and the opportunity cost of failing to retain women. And you have this positive reaction, but you also have the typical naysayers that say things like women aren't interested in STEM because they just don't like it. They're not playing with chemistry sets and computer games, but they don't. It just reinforces the stereotype, right? Because we're giving we're not giving these girls chemistry sets and computer games. Instead, we're giving them shirts that say pretty like mommy or Avengers t-shirts that say I want a hero versus be a hero that boys get from space camp and stuff like that. So you're basically telling the girls you can't actually do or achieve it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly. It says that the space camp was giving the boys the message that they can achieve, whereas girls were encouraged to dream instead.
Exactly.
Which is just,
And the thing is these things, this cultural, it's not backed up by peer-reviewed research, that it is very cultural, and it refers to the Bechdel test and the Finkbeiner test, which is originally posted on our XX Science, so I'm always thrilled whenever I see something about that. And just performance gap in math, and what is happening is people are trying to rectify this, but then they create toys that basically then reinforce cultural standards. So the girls, like a new spatial toy is still a dollhouse.
Yep, exactly. And I will say then that at the end of this post you put out, so when I covered the issue of how to keep girls interested in STEM a few months ago on XX Science, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from that, which is awesome. And a number of the, if I got negative feedback, it was, well, you've oversimplified and it's not just that we have to keep girls in STEM. Which is, of course, that's true. That's not the only issue, right? We have to keep girls interested in STEM and provide them things that they can do to be interested, but then we also have to keep them all through the pipeline. Absolutely, that's true. And that's how this post ends, right? Is that, yeah, I couldn't tell who was writing it, but whoever was went to an announcement at the White House and has a picture from the back of a queue of people waiting to go in, and that's almost all men.
Exactly.
For this science announcement. And that's true. I mean, I just left a job where almost exclusively the faculty were men as well. So the answer has to be multifaceted, right?
It does. And it's a thing that is just being hammered on all the time. I mean, Jeannie and I talked about in one of our podcasts together that Jeannie Garbarino, our biology editor, that it is a recognized problem, but what are the solutions?
Yep.
So.
Yep. Exactly.
That about wraps up our week at XX Science. Thank you, Chris, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. In the future, you can look forward to posts from our colleagues at Double X Science. One of them will be a review of the book Gulp by Mary Roach. It sounds like a lot of fun. That was done by our own Dr. Matthew Francis. There'll be another post on pacifiers and breastfeeding, which is always a topic that people are interested in. And of course, we'll still have more posts in our I Am Mental Illness series, which has just been amazing, the courage of people that have written in to talk with us about this.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave a review or a rating at iTunes to help bring our science to more people. Our music is provided by Editor-in-Chief Emily Willingham. Our artwork is by Dallas Lopez. Please like us on Facebook /XXScience and follow us on Twitter @XXSci. This has been Chemistry Editor Adrian Rorick and Science Ed Editor Chris Gunter. We are XXScience, bringing science to the woman in you.